The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Money FM 89.3, best of weekends.
A lot going on, and you know, we are talking about first world problems here, but there are some real challenges, real problems happening in our neighborhood in Southeast Asia. And let's get to one of them right now, because there was something that happened this past week that really shook many communities across ASEAN and Southeast Asia. And that was the execution in Myanmar of four pro-democracy individuals, including a former pro-democracy lawmaker, a prominent activist. And it is the first use of the death penalty in over three decades in Myanmar. Just a shocking moment for that country since the coup happened by the military junta. We know about the people that have been arrested and jailed and tortured, and so many things have been happening that are so horrible. But this is the latest in that very sad story. Let's bring on two very, very knowledgeable Myanmar watchers. First is So Mint, and So is the editor-in-chief of Mizima Media Group in Myanmar. And also our good friend Dr. Felix Tan, a political observer at Nanyang Technological University, who has just released a new book on Myanmar. Welcome to you both. We're sorry to have you on with this particular occasion, but we're certainly glad to have your knowledge and expertise. So Mint and Felix, welcome today.
Thank you.
So Mint, let's start with you. And when you first heard the news of these four executions, what went through your mind?
It didn't get surprised me. When they got arrested, they are gone. There was, of course, there were attempts to get them killed and executed, including the request coming through ASEAN, but the regime didn't listen and didn't heed to the pressure, internet pressure as well. So they went ahead with the executions. So it was not unexpected.
I mean, Dr. Tan, a bit of perspective for our listeners out there. Since the coup last year, 1st of February, they said, the military junta said, they would be in charge for 1 year. It's been 18 months now. They're still in power. Almost 12,000 people are in detention. More than 2,000 have been killed, including the four this week. Hard not to be pessimistic, Dr. Tan. What is your overall perspective on where we are right now in Myanmar?
Thank you so much. I think it's rather unfortunate, but you know, while a lot of us tries to be positive about the situation there, but unfortunately, under the military rule, it will be quite a stretch. Very often, and over the many years that they have been in control, they have refused to listen to the international community. They have refused to listen to ASEAN, and they have just functioned on their own. So I think, you know, moving forward, it'll be quite difficult for the people in Myanmar to so-called overthrow the military junta. They do have a lot of resources with them as well. And I think this latest incident that we have seen there clearly demonstrate what they are capable of doing. And they will continue with that sort of atrocities, because they are being, I wouldn't say they're allowed to do so, but they realize that there's no political will from ASEAN, no political will from the international community to do anything to them. So they can just walk away scot-free. Yeah. And I think that's a rather unfortunate situation that we have in Myanmar. And it's going to be difficult for the people.
Felix, your new book, Myanmar's Fragmented Democracy, talks about the coup, talks about the Union Solidarity and Development Party and internal levers of power. Are there any internal levers of opposition power that have a chance of breaking through or overcoming the junta at this point?
I think at this point, it would be very difficult. In fact, I think if you look through Myanmar history, when I've written in the book as well, it's the opposition collectively is in a disarray. There is no one particular strong opposition group or groups that are able to stand on its own. I mean, the biggest we can see right now is the NLD. And by arresting Aung San Suu Kyi, I think that kind of leave the NLD in, you know, hanging. And there's a lot of there will be difficulties for them to rise up to the occasion again. And all the other groups, I mean, you have the ethnic groups around. You have that they are vying for power. I think we have to understand there are some huge influential ethnic groups in Myanmar. And they might have a stronger stand. They might come up with some ideas. But I think at this point in time, it'll be very difficult. They are very disparate, and there is no one particular group that can rise up against a strong government like the military junta.
Now, let's stay with the domestic. We'll look at the international in a moment. I mean, I'm reading about this patchwork of militia forces in Myanmar known as the People's Defence Forces, the PDFs. This is the Gen Z, so brave, the Gen Z protesters, Glenn. They're escaping into the jungle. They're receiving training. They're trying to fight back these with the help of armed ethnic groups. They've carried out effective guerrilla attacks on the military and the police. But this takes time. I mean, is this something that you're hopeful about? Can they bring about change, or will it take too long? How much help do they need?
In the last 18 months, I have seen, first of all, immediately after coup, they, particularly the youth, they undertook peaceful protests, as you have seen and the world have seen, for weeks. And then the military, as expected, they came down very heavily and brutally and inhumanly. And they didn't have choice. So they decided to defend and take up armed struggle. What I have seen in the last 18 months is when they started to take up armed struggle, they didn't have any weapons. Some of them even started with improvised weapon, which didn't work even in the beginning. If you really look at that, then they improvised. They started manufacturing by themselves by using the telecom tower that they destroy. So they started using and improvising the arms and weapons. And now I am very surprised that they have got weapons. They have got arms. And ammunitions, largely, they do it by themselves. Of course, some of them, they are also getting from the ethnic armed groups. So we are seeing the proper national armed struggle taking place, and which is joined by the ethnic armed groups. If you look at the current National Union, if you look at the Kachin Independence Army, and currently army, they all are joining with these young who were civilians and students, of course, the armed resistance groups. The National Unity Government claims that it is about 80,000 to 100,000 people PDF in the country. Even if we can see as like a conservative number, 60,000. It is a lot, and we are seeing, and they, and many of them, for the first time in decades, are very strong in Bamen central areas. If you look at Sagaing region, Magre region, Sagaing region particularly, by the way, we are even, Mizima is also able to open a office in Sagaing region because it is liberated, quote-unquote liberated, not under the control of the regime anymore.
Wow. Interesting. We're talking with So Mint, the editor-in-chief of Mizima Media Group in Myanmar, and Dr. Felix Tan, political observer at Nanyang Technological University. And So Mint, let's just stay with you for just a moment on that, the point, the internal rebellion. We have seen over the past year the brutal crackdown on civilians, women, children, and also on the media as well. You know, more than 1,000 people are still in jails, as we believe, although the numbers aren't exact. What is the state of being able to get information to people around Myanmar, inside Myanmar, that is not coming from the government? Are people still using Facebook? I know that used to be a big channel for internal kind of news dissemination. With the journalists, more journalists being put in jail, how are people getting their news and information about the state of the coup?
Yes, they are getting, the people are getting the information, the people are getting out the information, so it is both ways working properly. Of course, with all this risk and danger to their life, the military regime is now, with the assistance from Russia and China particularly, they are able to even have equipment set up in remote townships, not only in Yangon and Naypyidaw, a place like there, they are able to scan the mobile of anyone. That is what they are able to do now. So basically, they ask the mobile and scan. They have an equipment to scan the memory of the mobile and then check Facebook or Messenger or all these applications to see anything against the regime is written or communicated. So that is even for the citizens, normal citizens or anyone is facing, particularly for the journalists and citizen journalists, the danger is more. For Mizima, for example, we have been charged with many charges. I don't even remember how many charges that can put us in life, at least in life, at least, I will say. Wow. So
for that life, is the life, danger. Life in prison, you're saying?
Life in prison, at least, yeah. At least. And of course, we have 140 people working in the organization. About 100 are in the country, in the areas under the control by the regime. So that's what the risks are there. But there are also challenges, like, for example, the military regime shut down the internet in certain areas. Mm-hmm. Whenever they go offensive to a particular area, one of the first things they did was shut down the internet. Then how about the information getting and getting out, receiving and getting out? So we have now shortwave radio, FM radio. By the way, we also have set up FM radio in certain areas. So that people without the internet can have access to information. Of course, television channels are also there, access to information. So basically, we have to use any means so that the people have access to information, and the people and the reporters and journalists also can get the information. Of course, very dangerous. One is also sources. We have seen more and more sources, citizen journalists, people sending reports, because they want us to transmit this, share this information to others.
Dr. Tan, listening to So Mint, there's astonishing account of bravery, journalists, citizen journalists, doing all they can to get the information out despite internet lockdowns, shutdowns, using short and long wave radio, astonishing. You're listening to the Gen Z protesters going into the jungle, forming parts of this People's Defense Forces. We're seeing across the country astonishing acts of bravery to try to push back against the junta there. But at some point, when does the international community add support? On Monday, the US called on China. Of course, China is Myanmar's most powerful ally, to act to rein in the junta there. China repeated its usual approach that it does not interfere in other countries' affairs. What does China, what does the US, what does the rest of Southeast Asia perhaps, what do we do here? You're hearing all these brave stories from So Mint internally. What does the rest of the world need to do?
I think at this point in time, there is no clear solutions. The U.S. and its allies have already imposed sanctions on certain military leaders, families, and of course their cronies, and that might work to a certain extent. But that also, if there is economic sanction on the country, that's not going to be good because the people will suffer.
Yeah.
With regards to China, I think they have made their stand very, very clear. They are not interested in getting involved in domestic affairs, and they have stood by that. But we have to also understand that China has certain interests in Myanmar, and they are building a pipeline across into the Rakhine region as well. So they are trying to ensure that businesses continues as per normal for them. So it's going to be caught between a rock and a hard place for China to get involved because they do have some interests in Myanmar. Also, the Myanmar military have accused China of backing some of the Shan separatist movements in the Shan state. Mm. And, at this point in time, it's going to be a difficult situation where China will just say that, oh, we're not involved, we're not backing them, but the military can accuse them. So it's a dicey situation because that's the border area. As for regards with ASEAN, again, I mentioned political will. They can issue statements. There have been talks within ASEAN itself that they would love to suspend perhaps Myanmar from the organization. But, moving forward, that will not be a feasible move because eventually and essentially what it needs to do is to engage with Myanmar. But I think what it needs to do is to have a stronger willpower to sit down with the Myanmar military together, perhaps with the NUG. And I think the NUG, collaborating with the NUG in this particular situation might resolve or come to a compromise to resolve the problem in Myanmar. But right now, as it stands, the military junta is stubborn, and so is the NUG. Yeah. Both doesn't want to talk to each other. So, even if ASEAN tries to mitigate the situation and say, let's sit down and talk, none of them want to sit at the same table to talk and discuss and resolve the problem. And so these are the three organizations that are involved, and you need to hold them together.
Felix, I just want to ask, in your excellent new book, Myanmar's Fragmented Democracy, you track over, let's say, the past 20 years, the democracy movement, and the NLD, et cetera. Is it even worth talking about the democracy movement in Myanmar right now? I mean, it's dead, isn't it? I mean, it's dead in the water for all intents and purposes, based on what the junta is doing right now. Is there any hope that process is going to be revived anytime soon? Do you see it happening?
That's a good question. I think revive, perhaps, probably not. And you're rightly so to say that democracy is dead in Myanmar. It's flat out gone. All right. But what the military junta might, or at least what they might intend to do is something similar to what we see in Thailand, where you have a pseudo kind of military regime in power. And then so what happens is that you will have certain military men relinquishing their role in the military, running for government, perhaps, in that kind of situation. And then, of course, the elections will probably be rigged. They will probably win, and they'll get into power. So if if they intend to do that, that is a path that they might choose to take. That is similar to Thailand, but otherwise they'll continue with their control, and they have done so in the past and for a very long time. And so they'll continue with their style of so-called governance in Myanmar.
So, Amit, you're there on the ground in Myanmar. How do you see it possibly playing out? What do you possibly see the junta doing moving forward?
I have been in this situation for the last more than 30 years. Personally, I've seen many of these. And in my opinion, the military regime is falling apart. Why I'm saying is there are many indicators. There are many things happening on the ground and in reality. First of all, the economy of the country is collapsing. First of all, it's collapsing. And they don't have foreign currency enough, and particularly US dollar. And they are Please don't get surprised. We should not get surprised when they declare what the Sri Lanka did in terms of economic implosion. That is first.
Interesting.
Secondly, the military regime, particularly Mae Aung Lai. By the way, he is a kind of a psychopath. Even if I don't say he's a psychopath, he's a kind of a psychopath surrounded by fascists and fundamentalists. And he is talking about acquiring nuclear technology in his recent trip to Russia. The last time Myanmar military talked about nuclear or attempted nuclear technology was before 2010 North Korea. Now he's talking. Why he's all this talking? Because it is at the last leg of the attempts or the tenure. So and also in terms of people, because for them to rule, they have to administer. They have to administer the country. They cannot administer in the last 18 months or 17 months, and they will not be able to administer. Every day, bombings, killings, fightings are taking place. If you monitor the Burmese media, because unfortunately, many of these may not have come out in English language or internationally. So in my opinion, the regime is falling apart. It is. We just have to know what will be the regime next after regime. That is a big question. And when the regime will fall apart, that is the question.
Yeah, that is a huge question. And of course, sometimes the question is, the devil you know is somebody you understand, but what comes next if you don't know who that might be? We do have to leave it there. So Mint, editor-in-chief of Mizima Media Group, and Dr. Felix Tan, political observer, Nanyang Technological University, and the author of Myanmar's Fragmented Democracy. Thanks to you both for being with us. We'll have you on again as we see the situation progress. But thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Stay safe.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.